Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and this is the SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired on September the 9th, 2011. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett, fellow SmackDown contributor here at .net, and we hope that you're enjoying this SmackDown audio recap audio that we're doing. Usually this is reserved for our members. But bringing you All Access this week, give you a little taste of what we bring to the site every week. And definitely, if you like what you hear, you should consider signing up for the full .NET membership. I provide a lot of audio to you guys each and every week. Dick and I break down the SmackDown show every Friday night, Saturday morning. Jason Powell comes along on Monday evening and does a Raw audio review. Will Pruitt does a recap of TNA Impact, usually sometimes on Thursday nights, most times on Friday during the day. Jason and I each do a Q&A audio each week where we answer both wrestling and non-wrestling questions of members. Jake and Will get together every Wednesday for the .NET Countdown where they look at the best and the worst in professional wrestling each week. And then Thursday is our flagship show. Jason Powell and I get together and do .NET Weekly. Runs anywhere from 2 to 3 hours this week each week. Has a lot of first-run news, a lot of information. This week we talked a lot about the Jeff Hardy trial because I was in Carthage, North Carolina, when Jeff Hardy pled guilty this past on Thursday of this week. So definitely something you want to check out and hear if you like what you're hearing today. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Once you're there, look on the right-hand side and click on the .NET member sign-up page, and you'll get all the information you need to get signed up there. $7.50 allows you to try us out for 1 month. $5.50 if you take the annual rate. Pay it all at once, save $2 a month, and I'm sure you'll like what you hear. We got all the audio, plus all the interviews that we have sitting in the archives. Access to the .NET member site that is absolutely ad-free. You don't have to worry about the pop-ups or anything on the side. Access to the .NET members forum and the .NET members blog site if you ever wanted your chance to do what we do and write a blog about what's happening with professional wrestling, and that is the place to check out and let all the members see it there. So definitely check it out, and while you're looking at things, head on over. Got to throw in my own personal plug here. TheFollowingContest.com, just like it sounds, TheFollowingContest.com. That will take you to my website where I have written my first book. It's available for 99 cents. Follows an independent wrestler who gets into a bit of trouble after a fall and wakes up to find that he has psychic powers. It's available for any e-reader, any e-book, any smartphone, tablet, PC. I've got all kinds of formats available for you. Only 99 cents, about 140 pages. Jake even had a chance to read it as one of my beta readers. So far, no bad reviews, so I'm definitely pimping it a little bit more. I hope you guys will check it out, thefollowingcontest.com. And now that all of that is out of the way, let's go ahead and bring Jake in again for the SmackDown that aired on September 9th, 2011, taped on September 6th. What did they say? I have Albany, but I know that's wrong. It was Ohio, wasn't it?
Yeah, Toledo tonight.
Yeah, in Toledo tonight. I forgot to change it to my base. Last time I saved it, they were in Albany, apparently. So forgot to change where it was tonight. My apologies to Toledo. But we're 2 weeks away, or at this point a little over a week away, from Night of Champions, Jake. And the biggest thing I can say coming out of the SmackDown is that we know what Randy Orton is going to be doing at Night of Champions, defending his World Heavyweight Championship against Mark Henry. But we have an Intercontinental Champion in Cody Rhodes who has no storyline, and really not anybody else with any real storyline going forward, with a possible exception of Sin Cara and Daniel Bryan. We are getting what we feared, are we not? Where everything is focused on Raw and SmackDown is the only thought given to SmackDown is how soon can we get Randy back on Raw?
Yeah, that appears to be the focus. I mean, it was obvious from the start that Randy Orton was going to be the focus of the show when he moved over to SmackDown. So, I mean, and I think we spoke about this before. I don't think we can call ourselves surprised. This is the direction they've taken, but it is kind of depressing that he's the only one on the show that has any kind of story going on heading into Night of Champions. When you have Cody Rhodes with the Intercontinental title with no match, and the only other feuds that they have even started building. I mean, what we saw tonight was them kind of start something with Sheamus and Christian and the Sin Cara and Daniel Bryan thing. But those are two feuds that have no title involved, and we're heading into the all titles pay per view, at least that we're led to believe. So it's been a disappointing couple of weeks of booking here on SmackDown.
Yeah, you're right. We talked about Orton being the focus of the show, and this is no real surprise to either one of us, or probably anybody who stopped to think about it for longer than 5 seconds. But it's, you know, it's not just that Orton is the focus of the show. I accepted that. I kind of moved on with that. It's that nobody else is doing anything. I mean, not really. You've got Daniel Bryan sitting there. You're supposed to be building for your WrestleMania main event next year. That's when he's going to cash in Money in the Bank, we believe, or at least that's what he's told everybody, and we hope that they're going to hold to that. We think that's a great idea. But, you know, and I realize there's a lot of time between now and Mania, but they're not really doing anything with him. And what he is doing with Sin Cara seems to actually be the beginning to a different story that involves Sin Cara and not him. He just seems to be the fodder to get there. And then everything else we're getting is just kind of raw leftovers in more of the Divas, more of the tag team stuff. And, you know, I got to guess, you know, why should I tune in next Friday? Jason and I spent a lot of time today talking about how Raw is not promoting their own stuff. They're not promoting SmackDown or anything else, but they're not even promoting Raw within Raw. Now, there's no reason to tune in next week. Do you think SmackDown's in worse shape now than Raw is as far as where creative is putting their attention?
Well, obviously the attention is Raw. I mean, they wouldn't have announced ongoing super shows if it wasn't going to be the focus. I mean, it's disappointing because we only get a few bits of SmackDown on Raw every week, and usually it's Randy Orton and Mark Henry and maybe Sheamus. Christian, I think, had an appearance too. But really all we've been getting is the main event show of SmackDown appearing on Raw, and then, you know, we get mid-card and lower-card leftovers from both brands on SmackDown. It's really turned SmackDown into the obvious B show, and that's, since they moved to cable, they've been trying very hard to kind of remove that stereotype, and I think they're definitely failing right now.
Let me run this for this scenario, Patrick. This is something Jason and I talked about earlier in .NET Weekly. Do you think that SmackDown ratings are about suffer, not even so much because the stories aren't as great as they should be or could be, but because, you know, Orton is the focus of SmackDown. All SmackDown, there's no question, it's Orton, and then there's a big gap to the next person. Whoever the number two babyface is, we'll call it Sheamus, he is light years away from Randy Orton. And as good as Mark Henry has been, he's not seen, he's not pushed like an equal with Orton, at least not yet. He's on his way there, and they can pull that trigger, but as of right this second, we can't say that he is. So if Orton is the reason to tune into SmackDown, and I go back to him winning the championship at the last pay-per-view, and that was their whole sale, tune in to see Randy Orton as champion again. He was only not champion for a few weeks, but tune in and see it anyway. That was their entire sale. If I'm a casual viewer and I see Randy Orton on Monday night, do I really have a compelling reason to tune in Friday to see him again? And if I don't, how bad is that going to hurt their ratings?
Well, it can't help. If SmackDown ratings decline, I think it's probably more of a reflection of the overall lack of interest in the product as a whole. I mean, when the flagship show is giving you all the talent, that's available from both rosters and still not delivering, you know, a broadcast that's bringing in viewers that, that aren't consistent. I mean, they're not picking up viewers from week to week. So, it has to be partly because fans, you know, get to see their favorite talent on Monday every week. And, you know, nothing is promoted in advance. They haven't been booking long-term in quite some time now. So heading into Friday's show, I mean, the only thing I ever know about a SmackDown episode generally is what I read on our website as far as, you know, what people have sent in from the taping. So, generally the show has just been very well promoted. They don't cross-promote well. They don't book in advance. So I don't know how they can expect ratings to increase over the long term.
And I don't want people to think that we're raining crap on SmackDown. We're going to the whole show now. But quickly, we both agreed that it was a pretty good show. It was entertaining. For me, I can always tell when the show was over if I'm like, that was 2 hours, then I find that it was a pretty good show. If I'm sitting there going, Jesus, how much time do I have left? A whole hour? Are you kidding me? Those are the bad shows. And tonight was kind of the quicker night, so the 2 hours went by pretty quick. I think we both agree that overall it was a fairly good show, but as we're going to talk about as we go through, it was just a lot of what we've seen the exact same up. It's almost like they took a clip out of each of the last 6 weeks of SmackDown and put it into one show.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It definitely felt like a recap show. I mean, there was some stuff that we've And that was kind of new as far as the tag feud and the ongoing Divas stuff. But I think pretty much everything else we've seen on SmackDown in the last couple of months.
Yep. And we started with Mark Henry. Mark Henry actually opened the show with his Hall of Pain video that they've been showing here recently. It's very, very, very well done. They cut to the live crowd, and Mark Henry, or the taped live crowd, but Mark Henry's music hit. He came to the ring. Cut a promo in the ring about the Hall of Pain. Talked about how the Big Show and Kane each had a special wing in it, and at Night of Champions, Randy Orton would be inducted. He said that what he did to Orton in the cage last week, a lot of people said had taken Orton to the limit, but Henry said it was a good start. Said that he was more unpredictable than ever. He was more aggressive, you know, just really put himself over. And closed with, "I'm the world's strongest man." And started to go on from there. Said he would be at Night of Champions, we would call him the new world heavyweight champion. But before he could go on, Zack Ryder's music hit. He came to the ring and said that he and Henry could be broskies. He got in the ring, and Henry asked him if he had a death wish, and Ryder kind of backed down, said he was out there for Teddy Long, and tell him that both Henry and Orton would be in action that night, but not against each other, and that they had a no-contact stipulation where they could not touch each other, they could not interfere in each other's matches. And then said he was going to leave. He tried to back away, and Henry stopped him, made him come back in the ring. They played this game for a while where Ryder would go to leave, Henry would get him back in the ring, either by grabbing him or talking him to come back in the ring. Finally, he said he had Zack Ryder by the collar of his shirt and said, "You told me I couldn't touch Orton tonight, so that means I got to touch somebody else, and or put my hands on somebody else," is how it was. And he looked at Ryder, he dropped the microphone, and just kind of stared at Ryder. Ryder actually attacked him first, and then Mark Henry just bitch slapped him. I mean, and there's no other way to describe it. He just backhanded Zack Ryder. It was ridiculous. Just slammed, just backhanded him like you hear parents talk about jokingly hitting their kids.
That was kind of like a polar bear hitting a harp steel or something. It just looked like he completely ragdolled him there for a second.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was a great spot, but it was just one of those things. Yeah, I mean, really, you need to see it because it's a great spot. But the same man, you're like, damn. And then he hit the world's strongest slam on Zack Ryder and kind of left him laid out there. And then Ezekiel Jackson came out for their first match, but we'll start with the opening segment. Mark Henry woke up one day and didn't suck anymore. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. He turned heel, and suddenly he did not suck. He turned awesome. He's been we've said it a million times on this radio show. He has been awesome for weeks now, and he just gets better every single week. I don't know how it's possible. I swear to God, I'm a Mark Henry fan. I know you feel the exact same way about it. It defies logic, doesn't it? I mean, it really just defies logic.
Yeah, you have to wonder, I mean, if this was always in there. I mean, we saw bits of it on ECW, but he wasn't particularly booked well on ECW. I mean, that probably got even less attention than SmackDown does today, but... You know, Mark has been, you know, great. I mean, on the mic he's great, in the ring he's been fun to watch. You know, everything he does is, you know, seems like it was, like I said in my report that, you know, everything he does looks premeditated. It doesn't look like anything happens by accident when he's out there, and I think that's pretty cool for a monster heel. You know, normally they're kind of portrayed as psycho or out of control or, you know, unable to control their rage, and Mark Henry looks like he's just going out there to kill people like he means to do it, and that's been a lot of fun to watch, and this promo was great. And as far as, you know, Mark Henry promos go, this is probably my favorite one. I mean, he's had pretty good ones, but this is the first really lengthy promo where they gave him probably 10 minutes to open the show, and I wasn't bored throughout any of it, and I think that's pretty impressive for a guy that just a couple of months ago I couldn't have cared less about.
Yeah, I mean, I really do hang on every word that he says right about now. I mean, he was as entertaining tonight as anybody else who had a microphone stuck in their face. I mean, he really was. There was nobody better than him tonight. And I think it says a lot. You're right, though. I mean, it kind of goes to that theory of the cream rises to the top. Jason and I talked about this recording.net weekly. You know, it was this whole thing about Triple H had said in an interview recently, this cream rises to the top, talking about, you know, when are you going to push this guy, when are you going to push that guy? And, you know, there's some truth to that sentence. There certainly is. But, you know, if creative holds you down, you're held down. It doesn't matter how good you are. You can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit, as the old saying goes. And if that's what you're given to work with, you can only do so much. And Henry's been given a lot to work with. I agree with you that he's a little bit different of a monster heel. He's not a guy who goes backstage and just attacks people blindly. Yeah, he beat up the audio guy, but he was looking him in the eye when he did it. And yeah, I mean, what he did was dirty. Certainly he's dirty in that sense, but he's not the guy that just mauls people. I go back to the Johnny Curtis moment when Johnny Curtis made his SmackDown debut, and Henry went backstage and just stood there and said, "I'm going to kill you in the ring." And it came across perfectly logical. I mean, he's just, you know, he's not, that's his job. That's what he does. He goes in the ring and he's a big, bad SOB and he just beats the crap out of people. They have done a really good job with him. We're very, very critical of creative when they give us garbage and we need to be very, praising of them for coming out with something like this because he's really taking this and run with it. The question is, do they screw this up at Night of Champions? Do you, you know, but the problem is, as much as I'd love to see Henry go over, because I think he's earned a title shot at this point, I really do, I don't want to see the title change hands again. You know, they've kind of put him in a bad spot to be. You know, do you hope he goes over at Night of Champions? And, you know, if not, is it, I mean, do you agree that it's because they just don't need to change the title right now?
Yeah, it would give the appearance of, you know, musical champions, and I don't think you want that. But, you know, at the same time, I think if they're going to have Orton go over, they got to give Henry all the excuses in the world. Just because, you know, he's too hot right now, just to let him go out there and take a clean loss in his first title match as a, you know, as a main event heel. So I don't think he goes over at Night of Champions, but I think they find a way to keep him strong. Otherwise, this would have all been a waste. And I can't imagine them, you know, purposely turning the one program that's working right now to crap.
Yeah, God, I hope not. And the other thing, too, I'm worried about is I'm worried about them doing something outside the character, because that's usually where it starts to break down is they get a character real hot like this. I look at Del Rio. My fear is they'll have Henry get DQ'd at Night of Champions you know, to keep it going somehow because he lost control or whatever, and that's not who he's been. So that's my biggest fear. Zack Ryder, quickly before we move on, I mean, he's getting a little bit of TV time. He's got to love the fact that he's getting on TV because he wasn't doing anything before, and his online episode stuff is not getting any hotter. It's still, every single one of them does somewhere between 120 and 150,000 views. But it's not getting any bigger. He's not growing that fan base any at all, but he is getting some TV time. Do you think he's making the most of it? Do you think he's being effective and that maybe the fans will want to see more of him?
Yeah, I mean, the crowd reactions are pretty strong for him. So, I mean, I definitely think they have a following there. Where they go with it from here, who knows? But, I mean, I think the guy's worked hard. I think he, you know, he's definitely, you know, that character means something to him. And so, you can tell he loves doing it. So, I mean, that's important. And the online fan base doesn't hurt, but I think he's, you know, he's put in the time and he's, you know, worked himself into a situation where they're going to give him a little bit to play with creatively, and we'll see how he capitalizes on it. But so far, I think he's done a pretty good job.
After commercial, the first match of the evening was Mark Henry defeating Ezekiel Jackson in 2:56. Kali and Zeke managed to entertain me a couple of weeks ago. In a two big man match, not so much here. I don't think that it's really anybody's fault. It was just the kind of the time they were given, a whopping 3 minutes. Big guys need a little more time, either to squash or to work to that moment. And this was kind of nebulous in between with a story they wanted to tell in the ring. It was mostly a squash for Henry. They started off with a test of strength with the finger lock. We just call it mercy back in the day. And, Henry, and again, kind of going back to the difference in his character, Henry just played it straight at first, and then when Zeke started to power back, then that's when he would step in, and I think he did a hip toss at one point or a backdrop. first, and then he just kicked him in a dirty move another time. So, I like how they started with that, but then it just kind of turned into this weird, well, we want to give Henry a squash, but we don't really want to kill Zeke in the process. So they gave him a little bit of offense. Henry ends up winning with the World's Strongest Slam, not before Zeke tries to put him in the torture rack, though. Zeke started to get him up. Henry escaped to the floor, and that's what led to the finishing sequence with Henry hitting the World's Strongest Slam for the win. Again, three-minute match, what more can you say about it? It wasn't terrible. It didn't make me want to change the channel, but certainly meh for me.
Yeah, I mean, these are two guys that you don't send out there hoping for, Michaels and Undertaker or something. Definitely.
Right.
I mean, these are not technical wrestlers. Mark Henry is probably a little bit better off than Zeke is just due to how much experience he has in the ring. But, this wasn't a technical masterpiece. It was a power match. And, Zeke attempted to use, whatever speed advantage he had, being a smaller guy. He hit some strikes, and then he did that one failed torture rack attempt, but that was pretty much the extent of his offense. I mean, once he failed the torture rack attempt, it was Henry doing the, his steamroll bit. I mean, he came back in, he hit a boot and a splash, and slam for the win, so... It was pretty, pretty pedestrian as far as match quality. I mean, you're not gonna see anything that's gonna make you wanna come back and look at it again.
We went backstage. Well, they all seemed hyped. Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes in the champion versus champion match. Then we went backstage. Terry Long was on the phone talking with someone about Randy Orton being on the cover of the new WWE 12 video game, and the blue lights came on and the sax porn music went up, and in walked Oksana, who just. This whole storyline just makes me claw my eyes out every time it even starts. She asked if she could be the special ring announcer tonight. Penny said she was last week. If she kept doing it, then she wouldn't be special anymore. She said that ring announcing wasn't the only thing she could do special with her mouth, and Penny called his breath. I thought, are you kidding me? She said, I could sing too, and Penny let out a sigh and said, good. They played the same banter game where Teddy got uncomfortable and then said he had to go check on Zack Ryder. He walked off and left her feeling, standing there looking very satisfied. Really? Are you kidding me? That's not the only special thing I can do with my mouth. They really went there?
They went there, and if you go back and watch on the DVR, you'll notice she's suggestively playing with a microphone throughout the entire conversation. So they're definitely going for the over-the-top sexual innuendo with these Oksana in little backstage conversations. But, I mean, she seems like she's into the character, and she's definitely talented enough to warrant, getting some time on the show. But I don't know how putting her with Teddy Long is going to do anything for her career.
Yeah, I mean, she's an attractive woman, and she can be sexy. There's no question about it. But just when she said it, and Teddy Long's goofy ass with the look he made when she said that, I was like, that is the worst, come get me face I've ever seen in my life. What was that? I mean, really, why would you put her with Teddy Long at this point? Where are they going with this? I don't have a clue. Do you have any idea where they're going?
No, I don't know where they're going. But here's the thing that confuses me. This isn't the first time they've done this with very attractive women and Teddy Long. I mean, how many times, does he get to play stupid? I mean, it's obvious that he's went through this a couple of times. So, I don't know. It's ridiculous.
That's true. I mean, we have called this the repeat of the Teddy Long time to go away on vacation love story angle that they do periodically. But as soon as no, kill me, please. It's just awful. But, I mean, it looked tonight like maybe we're starting to see. I don't remember her ever looking so, ha-ha, I got you, after one of those segments. Every time it's always been kind of left with her. You don't really see a good look at her face, or she's still making the sultry face. This was more like, yeah, I'm getting what I wanted type face. Did it come across that way to you, or was it just me?
Yeah, it definitely felt like the look she had on her face when they left the segment was different than it had been. I mean, whether it means anything, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, maybe I'm just reading. Maybe I just wanted to progress to something else at this point, so I'm trying to find a reason to get there. Kind of like NXT, coming to a conclusion somewhere.
Man, I have dreams.
Yeah, no doubt. After that, we had our second match of the night, Sin Cara defeating Tyson Kidd in 3 minutes and 31 seconds. This went to, a really quick match. I mean, just your typical Sin Cara match. Tyson Kidd got in a couple of shots. Nothing amazing. I mean, Cara was right on the offense from the very beginning. He hit the big crossbody on the floor within the first 30 seconds. Certainly within the first minute, he was flying through the air, hitting the crossbody on the floor. And we ended up with they changed the direction of of his finishing plancha lion salt. Chris Jericho finisher that he's kind of stolen. Instead of doing it across the hard camera, he did it with the hard camera, parallel with the hard camera, right in front. I don't know. Obviously, they're looking to see which one looks cooler on television. My advice would be, make sure the guy doesn't botch any more moves. But tonight, he did not botch any that I really saw. But it was a 3-minute match, and a 3.5-minute match, there's not a whole lot here. Tyson Kidd and Sin Cara can go out there and do 18 minutes that would make us just breathless when it was over, but that's not what we got tonight.
No, definitely not. They just had this match a couple of weeks ago. Hunico, the first time Hunico was out there as Sin Cara,
that's right.
He was against Tyson Kidd. So, this is, they've probably been doing it on house shows. This is probably match 40 for all we know, but, it was okay for 3.5 minutes. I mean, I don't know what else you can expect from them, but they worked in some of their high spots, and there were no botches, and they got to the finish okay. So, nothing to complain about.
Yeah, the moonsault at the end looked like Kidd got a couple of knees in the side of that one. That one looked kind of rough at the end, but nothing you could point at and call a botch. Just one of those things about working wrestling. I guess the big news in the match was the announcers at this point. Here's the problem when your announcers are so bad that a lot of people are watching with mute on or have completely zoned them out, and then you try to tell a story through the announcers, nobody hears it. It took me a minute to realize what was going on, but Booker T and Michael Cole and Josh Matthews start jawing back and forth about what Sin Cara had done the previous week when he attacked Daniel Bryan after the match. And they ended up goading Josh Matthews into, well, if Sin Cara wins, you'll go interview him. Josh Matthews got in the ring. There's nothing else to call it, but it was kind of a bigoted type. I mean, he wasn't overtly racist, but he said, pardon. He was like, excuse me, Sin Cara, pardon. I don't know if you can understand me, and he talked real slow to him the whole time, and the caricature of an American talking to a foreigner type concept, and he asked him, he said, what is up with this new aggression? Sin Cara did respond in English. Hunico, the guy who is under the mask right now, does speak English. Mystico, who was the original Sin Cara, does not speak, I guess he doesn't speak much, if any, English, but it's something that they're still working on. But he is not fluent. There's no way that this was Mystico. There's no question about that. But Sin Cara said he spoke in both Mexican and, or excuse me, Spanish and English, said that, what he said in English at least was that when he first got here, he was held back or holding himself back out of respect and just getting there. But now that he was there, he had been there, people knew him, nobody was going to hold him back. And then he went on to say that I think the most important line out of all of it, which was, I am the real Sin Cara. This is the real Sin Cara. Before we get on, Daniel Bryan came out then. Before we bring Daniel Bryan out, just let me ask you real quick. Did the Josh Matthews thing bother you as much as it did me? I guess I wasn't offended, but it was just very, really, come on, for me. And what did you think of Sin Cara's promo?
The Matthews thing, I don't know if you want to call it racist, but it was really patronizing. And I think, anytime you're going to have, characters, international type characters, that's the last thing that you should be doing. They're going to have a difficult time getting over as it is, to send your goofy announcer in there to, patronize them. So it did bother me, but I wouldn't call it racist necessarily.
I thought was a better word.
Yeah, that's probably a better word. But, as far as Sin Cara's promo went, I thought it was fine. I don't necessarily have any complaints about it. I think the real Sin Cara thing was a dead giveaway for what we've been talking about for a couple of weeks, which is, the potential of bringing back Mystico as a second Sin Cara to kind of reclaim his identity or whatever the feud would be. But the thing that really bothered me about the whole thing was not the wrestlers involved, actually. It was the announce team. They're still attributing all of the original Sin Cara's achievements to the current one. So, they're still talking about his career in Mexico, which is inaccurate. And, when Sin Cara started speaking English, Booker tried to say, well, yeah, I've been, talking to Sin Cara backstage, and he's been learning English for like a month now or something like that. And, he's in there talking in complete sentences and comprehending Josh Matthews. So the whole thing was just fairly ridiculous to me, the way it was portrayed on TV. It put WWE in kind of a silly light, in my opinion.
Well, Josh did talk slow for him. I mean, let's keep that in mind. He did give him the, I don't know if you can understand me, but... I mean, he did give him the slow cadence, because that's all foreigners need to understand the English, right? It's just for,
yeah, you just slow it down a few beats, I guess.
Yeah, and I've heard if you speak, about 15, 20 decibels louder, it's just perfect.
Exactly.
Anyway, but at this point, we did have Daniel Bryan, his music, he came down to the ring with a microphone. He said that, if Sin Cara wanted to be aggressive, he wanted a rematch next week because they had a problem they needed to solve, and Sin Cara could be as aggressive as he wanted to be and challenged him to a rematch next week. Sin Cara attacked him and put him in his own lock, put him in the LaBelle lock, and really wrenched it back, pulled Bryan up off the mat until referee Charles Robinson finally stepped in and slapped on Sin Cara until he finally let go. You know, what's wrong with you? And had Daniel Bryan passed out in the ring. God, again, it looks like we're going to the I'm the real Sin Cara, this is the real Sin Cara, however was he worded it. Is the dead giveaway to this, good versus evil Sin Cara that we've talked about for a few weeks now. But do you really want to use, is Daniel Bryan the guy you want to use to slingshot that story forward? I don't know that he has enough star power right at this moment. I mean, I know that there are diehard fans for him, and I'm not saying he's not worthy of it, but he's not as over as he's not a star yet. He's just not. And, I don't know if he's got enough there to really, A, set that story off in any type of good way, and B, happen without it diminishing him. There's still a lot of time between now and WrestleMania, but I'm really just kind of concerned that they don't seem interested in making him look good at all.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see how it plays out next week. I mean, he could end up coming out looking decent, I guess. But I think it's more, who do they trust in the ring with, the Sin Caras. I mean, they're pretty botch prone, and I think the matches that both of them have had with Bryan have been fairly clean. So, maybe the fact that he's worked a little bit in Mexico is assisting, and he's just kind of being used temporarily to get them to where they need to go. I don't think it shows any kind of lack of confidence in him. I think maybe it shows that they do have confidence in him because they're willing to put him out there with guys that they that have a pretty bad reputation backstage at this point.
Maybe. I don't know. It just seems like ever since he's announced that he was going to be cashing in at WrestleMania, it just seems like, oh, we've got 9 years to put him over. It's fine. It's not a big deal. But, I am interested to see what they can do. I wouldn't mind seeing them get a pay-per-view match. I think that could be certainly something fun to sit through, maybe as a second or a third match on the card. It would be a good spot for WWE to have those guys go out there and give them 18 minutes with entrances and see what they can do in about 14, 15 minutes time. I think they could do something very fun. We'll see what happens, over the next couple of weeks for sure. After commercial, we had the Cody Rhodes video package, the one they've been doing here recently with him, with kind of a playoff of his, mixed in with his entrance theme and the newspapers, the speakers, and all that sort of thing. Another very good video for Cody Rhodes that really, did him some justice. We cut backstage to Matt Stryker interviewing Randy Orton. Orton put over Rhodes, called him unstable, so that he knew that he had a little bit of that in him as well, so that made made Rhodes dangerous. Then he turned to Henry, said that Henry was at the best at the peak of his career at this point. He was hot, he was over. People asked what's going to be able to stop Mark Henry. And he said, I'll tell you what can stop it, the RKO. But he did the wrestling RKO style. kind of, you know, it was a little bit different from what we normally get from Orton each week, and yet it still seemed like a paint-by-numbers promo for me.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt, too. I keep waiting for him to show me something on the microphone. It just never comes, and it's kind of disappointing because I really enjoyed Randy Orton on the mic as a heel, but as a babyface, he just kind of seems like he's going out there and doing the Cena thing where he kind of hits a couple of talking points and then, you know, uses a catchphrase and then punches his time card. So it's been kind of disappointing in that regard, and he still hasn't really shown any vulnerability or self-doubt on the microphone, and I think that's going to be necessary for him to help build some of these heels on the show because you can't, you know, steamroll everybody on the roster and, you know, then they're going to be scrambling to find somebody to feud with them. So he needs to help get some of these guys over.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, it's the type of thing where, I mean, it's enough, I guess. It gets by, but that's, hey, you get out what you put in. And he's putting in the absolute bare minimum. It didn't stink, but it's, yeah, I think Cena-esque is probably the best way to describe it. It's not the same promo, but it's the same feeling you get after the promo, which was, you know, point one, point two, like you said, point one, point two catchphrase. Thank you, have a good night. I'll be here all week, trying to be. It's kind of upsetting. I want to see more from Randy Orton, more of the character from Randy Orton than what we're getting now. Of course, to be fair, the last time we asked for that, we did get some of the silliness we did with the jumping jacks in the ring and whatnot. So maybe we should just stop while we're ahead on Orton and leave it where he is. Kelly made her entrance, and after the commercial, we got a video replay that showed her the attack from Beth Phoenix and Natalya on Raw. She looked all pissy about it as Natty and made her entrance with Beth Phoenix, and that was our third match of the night. Kelly defeating Natalya, 2 minutes 56 seconds. I am just so done with Kelly in the ring at this point. I had a crazy Twitter stalker guy jump all over me because I crapped on Kelly, and I really went back and tried to look at her with fresh eyes, and all it did was make me just dislike Kelly even more. I mean, I understand why she's a beautiful woman. She's very over. I understand, but to me, it's John Cena all over again, especially when you look at what she does in the ring. She's not convincing in the ring. She doesn't hit the ropes very hard. I'm sick of the women touching the rope, and it doesn't even vibrate, let alone move. But I'm sorry, I'm kind of going off on a rant here. This was kind of a back-and-forth match to kind of start off with. The Natty really took control and hit a bunch of a big offense on her, choked her out a couple of times. She had her hooked for, she had on the abdominal strips for a while, and he was slapped her on the stomach a few times. She got her finally hooked for a sharpshooter, and as she went to flip her over, she bent down. Kelly grabbed her hair, pulled her down, and rolled her into a small package, inside cradle-type pin, for the pinfall victory. Beth hit the ring immediately, and Kelly managed to roll out of the ring before Beth could get her hands on her. Natty told her just being pissed off. I was very excited when they started this with the Divas. I don't understand what they're doing with Natty and Beth at this point. Every time we see them, they come out all, you know, with all the makeup and little Gucci mama dresses and stuff. And I'm fine with it insofar as, okay, they want to look pretty. That's fine. They can. They're beautiful women too. But I don't understand how it works in the storyline. We don't like playing with dolls. We don't like the Barbie doll look. But then they dress them up almost like Barbie dolls, but just, you know, more muscular versions of it. I don't understand what the hell is going on here. All I see is Kelly with the title, and every time I turn on the TV, her ass is there stinking up the ring.
Wow. Maybe I didn't put nearly as much thought into it as you did, but I didn't think it was awful. I mean, it was exactly what you would expect from, you know, these two in a 3-minute match on a SmackDown when they're building towards, you know, a feud with somebody else. So, you know, they have to. They've been kind of keeping this story going where, you know, Kelly has been getting these upset wins, kind of, you know, staving off the inevitable of, you know, the bigger, more powerful, you know, female wrestlers, you know, taking over the division. So, I mean, I get where the storyline is from that perspective, but, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's not crisp technical wrestling where, they're running the ropes strong and you know, not, you know, taking rest breaks and things of that nature. I mean, they are what they are, and unfortunately for, you know, fans of, older female wrestling, or especially Japanese female wrestling, they're never going to get that style in the WWE. So, you know, I like that they're at least attempting to kind of get past the Barbie doll thing. You know, and I think where Beth and Natty are going with the way they're dressing is like the 40s pin-up dolls kind of thing, because they've been putting that on Twitter. So I think that's kind of what they're trying to do, kind of throw back to a classier, more classic look in comparison to the, you know, kind of the stripper sex pod kind of stuff that the Bellas or Kelly or Eve have been doing. So I think that's kind of the psychological aspect of this. But I thought it was a decent effort in the ring. I mean, I know what, you know, my expectations are for these women, and it at least met that. But and they seem to avoid a lot of the botches that have happened in Kelly matches in the past. So, I mean, for me, it was up to expectations, and I don't know what more I could expect from them.
That's your point. I mean, if you're grading on the Kelly curve, then yes, it was a good match, you know. But I guess that's my problem, is I'm tired of grading on the Kelly curve. Maybe, I mean, I realize it may just be me, but I really like women's wrestling. I always have. I think it's a lot of fun when it's done right. And it just aggravates the crap out of me. I don't know. I didn't mean to go on my little tangent there, and I appreciate you not selling me there.
The thing that, I mean, you got Karma on the shelf, and so they've had to scrap a lot of what they obviously had planned for that. And, you know, Beth and Natty are definitely excellent substitutes to play the badass role. So, you know, when they eventually get to the point where, you know, either Beth or Natty is jealous of the other one with the title and they go to that feud, I think we could see some great wrestling out of this. So I think I'm just biding my time, waiting for, you know, things to get back on course for the women, because it's been a long time coming.
It might be. It's also the first week of homeschool for us. And, God knows it's always my worst week. But anyway, so after that, we had a plug for Sheamus and Barrett for next. We went to commercial, I apparently saw a different version than you did, because I got behind and my DVR was not working. Actually, I don't have DVR, truth be told, and I had to go on to an online version when it's already been preloaded, and I got to see Christian come out and cut a video. Was that not on your on the American feed?
Did I mean Christian cutting a promo?
Yeah,
I saw that. Maybe I forgot to paste it into my report. I'll have to go back.
Yeah, because I was comparing reports back and forth and just sitting there looking. So we did get Christian came through. We actually had Tony Chimmel started to introduce the next match. Before he could get into the introduction, Christian's music hit. He came to the ring in street clothes. He said that every match was delayed, was postponed or delayed until he got his rematch. He kept pretty much the same promo he had cut before. He put over that he had to fight on Monday, and then he got a bro kick, and then had an adjustment. And a mere 48 hours later, he had to compete in the ring, and he gave Randy Orton all he could, and the expert said he was up on the scorecard. You know, and so he deserved one more match, and tried to get the fans to even to chant it with him. But before it could get anything, even try to get started, Sheamus came out, cut him off. Sheamus came in the ring telling one of his crazy Irish stories about puppies and how the run of a litter had grown up and gotten the mange, and every time he barked, hot air blew out of his butt. He said arse. And Christian cut him off, said for him to shut up. Nobody cared about his stupid Irish stories. Sheamus got in the ring at that point and said that he said that that was fine, but that Christian needed to know a couple of things. He needed to know that he was out of luck, out of chances, out of time, out of matches, out of excuses, and he was out of all those things, and he was certainly going to get out of this ring. And Christian backed away and stepped out of the ring and left the ringside area as Wade Barrett made his entrance. Was it just me, or at that point are you going, I bet I know how this match ends?
Yep, pretty much. I don't know how you could predict this going either way.
It was a good promo from Christian, and I thought that Sheamus did fine. I mean, his cheesy Irish stories are cheesy, but they're also fun, and it's working with the crowd. But, I mean, it was just a dead giveaway. I mean, completely killed any momentum going to that next match.
Yeah, it was a pretty dead giveaway. The thing that confused me about Christian's promo was the experts and the scorecards. What exactly was he talking about it? Was that just him trying to get a ribbon on somebody, or what?
I guess. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he was doing it for purpose or if he just, oh, that's just Christian being silly or whatever, but it was a pretty funny line.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I had on the scorecards like he has rounds to think about or something. It was pretty funny. I got a kick out of it.
And, of course, we did get what we thought we were going to get at that point. We had Sheamus defeating Wade Barrett by disqualification at 11 minutes and 3 seconds. The finish came with, let's see, Sheamus had Barrett all tangled up in the ropes. He hit the clubs to the chest and then did the running knee lift. He hit a shoulder block from the top rope. And before he could do anything else, Christian ran in and attacked Sheamus, called him the DQ. These guys had wrestled the first just couple of minutes of the match before it went to commercial just about in the match itself. But these guys just beating the hell out of each other. It was all clubs and fucking blows and strikes and kicks and knees. And they'd roll to the floor, get back in the ring, beat the hell out of each other, split up for a second. It was just kind of brutal to watch at first. But after Christian came in, both guys ended up attacking Sheamus, beating him down until Sheamus just powered back. He ended up hitting the bro kick on Wade Barrett and lifted Christian for the Irish cross move, and Christian escaped and ran up the ramp and left Sheamus in the ring to celebrate. I watched the match, and it was an okay match, but I never allowed myself to get into it because we knew what was coming, and the match was probably better than I'm giving it credit for just sitting here thinking about it, because we knew what it was going to be, and so it was just a wait and, you know, watch the entrance wait, and when Christian comes, we know it's over. I mean, it really, for me, just, you know, took all the steam out of that match.
Yeah, definitely, and especially, I mean, since we had just seen it a couple of weeks ago. I mean, and it was a couple of minutes long, and Sheamus just beat the crap out of Barrett. So, I don't know how you could come into this week, especially with that promo at that match, and expect anything different. But, I mean, while it lasted, it was pretty brutal, and it was fun to watch, and, you know, I like Barrett, and I like Sheamus, so, I mean, I enjoyed the match, but there definitely wasn't a whole lot of reason to suspect anything different than what we got. I think that's a lot of what's missing from a lot of WWE storylines right now.
Yeah, you know, but I guess the other thing, too, that gave it a lift coming out of it was Sheamus versus Christian. Yay!
Yeah, I don't know what I'm supposed to think of that. I mean, we just saw those two have, you know, a good series of matches together just a couple of months ago, so... I'm surprised they're going back to it that quick, but I guess I don't know what other options they have considering the kind of dearth of main event talent on SmackDown right now.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have something just under the world title match. I mean, what else do they have? I mean, who else can you put there? Do you want to put Cody Rhodes right there? I mean, he's fine. I think he can handle it, but who do you put there with him? You know?
Maybe Brian or something. I don't know. But they already did that, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's just not a whole lot to work with, so I hate they're going back to it. We should see a couple of good matches. It's probably going to feel like deja vu all over again, but that's what we got with SmackDown this week, so why not? It seems to be what WWE has. Go back to the well if you can't find something new that works.
They started that DiBiase and Rhodes thing last week, and, you know, DiBiase was, I guess, a mystery man tonight because we just didn't even see him, and we saw him in some video packages, but that was about it.
Right, and my guess is that's where they go next week for Night of Champions. I mean, I really think that's where they're going to end up. But
that means you book that match 2 days ahead of the pay-per-view. I mean, that's
right.
Kind of unbelievable.
Well, it shows how little they care about that title.
Right.
My other problem with this match, though, is that Barrett didn't look good. He got in some offense in the match, don't get me wrong. But the last thing you have is him getting kicked in the face and Christian escaping. And so Sheamus and Christian come out of that okay. And I realize that's your bigger feud, but you really just burn up Barrett. I mean, I honestly, God, don't think it's on purpose. I don't think he's crapping anybody's bag and is being punished or anything like that. I just think they think the guy can take it and they think he's over or they don't care. So it's really strange to me. As hot as he was, he's just nothing now, is he?
Yeah, it sure doesn't seem like they take him seriously for, you know, this main event type stuff. It's kind of a shame just because of how much talent he showed during that whole NXT angle. It goes back to the whole Cena thing. I mean, Cena killed that guy. I mean, not only did he no-sell a DDT on the cement last year at SummerSlam, but, you know, at the end of, I'm trying to remember what pay-per-view that was, where they had that singles match, I mean, Cena literally buried him under a pile of chairs. So, I mean, you could tell that's kind of where this, you know, his character was going to go for a while. So he's definitely in the process of working his way back up, but, I mean, they really haven't given him a whole lot to work with creatively since then.
Yeah, it's really a shame how far Wade Barrett has fallen. I don't know what happened there, but and he's a guy that when I look at, I don't even think NXT anymore. You know, I mean,
no.
He's beat that rap. When I see Heath Slater and what's his face from Justin Gabriel, even when I see those guys, I think NXT. When I see Wade Barrett and Daniel Bryan, I don't think NXT. Those are the two guys who have shaken that mantle off. Brian obviously is getting the best treatment right now, but Barrett's treating him differently than Gabriel and Slater and Otunga and all these other guys at this point. It's really a shame how far he's fallen since last year. I don't get it. If he was terrible, then I would understand it, but we also turn and go, but he's not. Why don't they see that? So, I don't know. Hopefully it's not more of the, well, he's still the young guy and he's got to pay his dues type thing because they're missing out with money on Wade Barrett. But I thought they did it with Brodus Clay, too. But what do I know? So,
that guy's money. I don't know why he's down in Florida. I mean, that guy can go, and he's awesome on the mic. So bring him up.
Brodus Clay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, if you haven't seen Brodus Clay, I've said this before, I'll say it again. If you haven't seen Brodus Clay's promo that he cut at the end of NXT Season 5, season four, they're on season five right now. At the end of NXT season four, when he lost to Johnny Curtis that night, go find that promo. He talks about being the thing that goes bump in the middle of the night. And tell me if you hear that promo and you don't think it's the best heel promo you've heard in the past 5 years, well, then quite frankly, we're just not ever going to agree on anything. That was fantastic. They missed the boat big time with that guy. I was really upset after that. It was the only season of NXT coming out of, other than when Nexus showed up, but just that night that it ended, that I was like, wow, there's a star. And he looked like a star that night. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out, please. We had a video package that highlighted Edge's appearance on Haven. Haven, of course, airs on Sci-Fi, and Edge is a regular character on there, not every week, but a reoccurring character. And he did at least like half a season, if not a full season, here this over the summer. So definitely check that out if you're a big Edge fan. And then from there, Air Boom made their way to the ring, followed by Jinder Mahal and Kali. And we got a video that reminded us, hey, we just saw these two teams wrestle. So now let's give it to you again. Air Boom defeating Jinder Mahal and Great Kali in 3 minutes and 28 seconds. But this, obviously the story here was not so much this match as it was what happened to end the match and post-match. Jinder Mahal, let's see, Kofi got a hot tag from Evan Bourne. The heels were working over Bourne. Kofi got the hot tag with Jinder in the ring. He pretty much laid out Jinder. We had the big, scramble at the end with everybody in the ring, breaking up pinfalls. Bourne got tossed out of the ring by Kali. Jinder got mad at Kali for some reason. I'm not entirely sure that you can even make an argument for what was going on in the ring at the time that Jinder could have a reason to be upset at Kali. He yelled at Kali and then slapped him. When he slapped Kali face-palmed him, pushed him back into the Trouble in Paradise for a Kofi Kingston pinfall victory. And then they got the hell out of Dodge so that Kali could kind of stand over Jinder Mahal, give him a look of disgust, and then storm out of the ring and with Jinder Mahal yelling after him in the ring. 10 weeks ago, something like that, roughly, we were all excited about this. Jinder Mahal debuted when actually SmackDown was here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we didn't know what was going on at first. It blossomed quickly into a fun story. Then it fell the hell apart, and now it looks like this was our payoff. I guess we'll get a match out of these two somewhere. What a way to ruin what we thought was going to be a very good story.
Yeah, it seems to have come to kind of an unceremonious end here. I mean, this is basically the low point of the entire thing, and this is when they choose to break him up. But it just seems like a complete failure from start to finish for the most part. I mean, it's kind of sad because, you know, I had some optimism, and I think you had some optimism, too, about where they could go with it, but it just never materialized.
Yeah, I guess at this point, how are they going to sell this? Or do you think they'll just walk away from it? I mean, I know I try to stay away from fantasy booking as much as possible, but they've got a mess here. So they built this emotional story about Polly's sister. They've hinted back at it without really beating it, you know, beating that bush, but the announcement team has pointed it out since then, that was the storyline. Do you think they just walk away from this, or do they try to find a way to turn it into a match where Kali rescues his sister from poverty? I mean, you think they just walk away, or do they do something?
At this point, it might actually be better to walk away. I mean, if Jinder is the real talent out of the two, you know, why put him out there to lose to Kali, you know, in his first real feud? I mean, technically at that point, over the honor of Kali's sister, I mean, it would just make Jinder look like a complete wuss, and, you know, he wouldn't have much to rebuild from after something like that. So maybe at this point, it's just better that they just said that, they're split them up, I guess, and just leave it at that. I don't know how you do this and actually walk away with Jinder saving something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you're right. I think if they just kind of go, okay, they broke up, see, what are you talking about? What's the payoff? There it was. He had him pinned, and he walked away, and Jinder's done. I mean, really, we kind of need some of the WWE, these are not the droids you're looking for, Jedi mind trick right here, because I don't know that you can salvage this in any way that makes for a good story. I think you just walk away, and I think Jinder is a talent. I think he is a guy who has he's got a great look. He's comfortable on the mic. He needs to tweak his character a little bit. He's kind of rough around the edges. Still a little bit green in the ring, but not a bad talent by a stretch of the imagination. I mean, I think he's a guy that's got some future going forward. Do you think he's done enough to be able to stand alone in WWE right now, though?
I don't know. I guess we haven't really seen anything with him on his own. It's always been, with the 7-foot backup. So it would be interesting to see how they could do that, but I think it would take some serious changes to the way he carries himself, because at this point he's kind of portrayed as the weak link of the two, and he just kind of bosses Kali around. So they're going to have to do some work with him. I think you're right. I don't think it could work if he was just kind of thrown out there as is. They need to tweak something.
Cody Rhodes made his ring entrance after that, and I want to point this out because I don't think a lot of people know this. The guys that they use for bagmen, with Cody Rhodes acts, who come out and hand out the bags while you're out there, are all 99% of the time they're local indie wrestlers who maybe got a tryout or were just there to be seen or know somebody so that they're a guest or whatever, and so they give them this opportunity to go out there and get a little FaceTime, and they always send one of those guys to give Booker T a bag. And Booker T, I mean, it's kind of becoming my favorite part of the show is watching Booker T stare these guys down, because I don't know if he's just messing with them, you know, because this is the big inside joke, you know, is to send the young indie guy who's trying to make it in. You go out there, sit in Booker T's face, they have Booker T stare a hole in you like he does. I don't know if he's really pissed off that they're messing with him, almost like a Jim Ross type thing, or if it's just Booker T messing with the young guys. But have you noticed how they always cut to him and show him just staring daggers into the guy that brings in the bag?
Yeah, they do seem to repeat that from week to week, and I've always just kind of laughed at it, thinking it was just Booker having a joke with the guy. But I don't know, maybe it is an ongoing rib on Booker T. It wouldn't be the first time they've done that to somebody on the announce team. So yeah, but
I mean, that's the thing. I don't know. Obviously, I think they're playing a joke on someone. The question is, are they scaring the hell out of some young indie kid for the hell of it, or are they messing with Booker T? Either way, as much as I despise Booker T on SmackDown, it's the one thing that I go, okay, that was kind of fun. But after commercial, we had Cody Rhodes cut his promo. He said that while his face was still fractured, he was an inspiration. He said that he was the blind spot that no one saw coming. He had been surrounded his whole career by people who were jealous of him, his look, his youth, his athletic ability or whatever. And he said he tried to inspire Ted DiBiase with his success, but Ted was content being Ted. He didn't understand that because he wouldn't be content being Ted. And so he dropped him like an anchor, and as Ted DiBiase dropped, what floated up was the Intercontinental Championship, and that he was going to restore the honor to the Intercontinental Championship, and that was going to be his focus now. He said that Randy Orton had referred to him as unstable and that there was a thin sheet between unstable and thriving, and that Randy Orton had inspired him to show Randy how unstable he could actually be. And then Orton and Music kicked for his entrance for their match. We both like this character, but we've also both been very critical about the fact that there's not been any huge development. I felt like this was at least a different promo. I felt like it feels like he's starting to find his character. It's like, okay, he went up there and got the same promo for a long time. Then he started tweaking it a little bit to the situation, and now it feels like he's starting to find his sea legs a little bit. He's able to really turn these promos into that character. Not huge development tonight, but I at least was happy that it was something a little bit different and have hope for the future going forward.
Yeah, I am a fan of Cody Rhodes, the guy. I'm not so sure I'm a fan of this character anymore. I just think it's kind of worn on a little too long without any progression to, I don't know if, I think he can save it. I do, because I think he's that talented. But, the character has kind of been in neutral for so long, and then they kind of, attached DiBiase to him for a few months, and that kind of even stalled it further. And now we're just, we're trying to give this character a rebirth after winning the Intercontinental title, and I don't know if they have enough time to do it before Night of Champions, but they definitely need to put him on the track of being, one of those strong heel champions that's routinely defending his title and retaining, and that's the only way they're ever going to get to the point where the Intercontinental title's taken seriously anymore. And I do think Cody Rhodes is probably one of the guys that could do that, so I'm happy he's in that position, but I would like to see him at least acknowledge the fact that his character hasn't progressed and kind of give himself a new direction.
Yeah, I think there's at least some hope here with what we saw tonight. It was at least something a little bit different. If there's time to fix it or not, there's no way of really knowing until we see how it plays out. But it's the last chance for the character. If he doesn't get it to work here, then I think that we can both agree that it's still it, and he just needs to move on to something else at this point. We did get our sixth match of the night, the final match of the night, Randy Orton defeating Cody Rhodes in 15 minutes and 8 seconds. They tried to play this up as a big champion versus champion thing, but A, they just did one not too long ago. B, the championships mean so little that you couldn't get there. So what you ended up with was a match that I wanted to see as a wrestling fan, but one that there was no real reason to see as a fan of television wrestling. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think we've seen this enough, recently to kind of know exactly what to expect, and I think we got that. In fact, I think this match was very similar, in story to what we saw from DiBiase and Orton just a couple of weeks ago. So, I thought the match was good. The only thing that irritates me about Cody Rhodes matches now is they sometimes use his mask as a prop, and sometimes it's just completely ignored. Like twice in this match, Orton headbutted him. And there was at least two series where Orton punched him in the mask several times and kind of no-sold it like it was just any other punch. So, that little stuff like that kind of bothers me, but I'm sure other people don't even notice it. But overall, I thought this was a good TV match, but it was eerily similar in story in the ring to the one that DiBiase and Orton had just a couple weeks ago.
There was one series in particular where Cody headbutted Orton, and they announced him, put it over as the mask. And then Orton headbutted him back, God, within a minute. I mean, within 60 seconds, he headbutted back. And Cody sold it, and Orton just kind of shook his head a little bit like he was no big deal. And I think even Josh Matthews was like, oh, did you see that? But then he, like, shushed it real quick. It's unfortunate that they're, like you said, they're doing that with a mask. That is within the same match, sometimes the mask is a deadly weapon, and sometimes it's not even existent. So that is kind of frustrating. The finish on this came on a string of reversals and dodges and ducks. You had what ultimately ended up happening was Orton ducked a beautiful disaster kick from Cody and popped into the RKO. Cody kind of had to wait for a second to kind of expose it a little bit there. It wasn't as smooth as it could have been. I, that's what I call a botch or anything crazy like that, but the run had been very, very clean, and it was that last minute, it was like just a little bit too long to get to that RKO, but a very good match. Mark Henry hit the ring immediately. Let me back up the match real quick. The first half we got before the commercial, kind of flat, kind of methodical, kind of steady. The second half paid off pretty well, but rough crowd tonight. I mean, even Orton didn't even get the big pop that he's been getting everywhere else. I don't know if it was just the way they were mic'd or that building or that crowd or the size of the crowd or what it was, but if we had a little bit better crowd, this would have been even a much better episode of SmackDown.
Yeah, the crowd is kind of that, you know, it's that wild card, and, you know, it can make good shows great, and it can make, you know, just mediocre shows seem kind of irrelevant, and I think that's kind of what happened tonight. It wasn't a bad show, but, you know, the way the crowd no-sold most of the action kind of made it feel, you know, pedestrian in comparison to a lot of the more recent shows with the hot crowds.
Yep, absolutely. After the match, we had Mark Henry's music hit. As soon as it was over, he climbed in the ring. They faced off. I guess the thing here is that whatever happens from here going forward, they did keep the no contact clause insofar as Zack Ryder said there's a no contact clause, meaning neither one of you can interfere in the other's match, and nobody beat. I mean, they did not interfere in the match. It was over. Wasn't even like a distraction type victory type thing either. It was over before we ever saw Henry. Henry came to the ring, got Orton's face. Orton attacked him first, managed to get in a few strikes, but then, much like he'd done with Ryder earlier, he just clobbered Orton and hit back-to-back World's Strongest Slams. Went and got a chair and set the part with the crossbar on the bottom of the legs across Orton's throat. Sat down on it. The chair was rocked up to make it look worse than it actually was, and he was kind of holding it in that situation with how he was sitting on it, obviously. Orton was not in any trouble, and he didn't really, at first it looked like he was trying to sell it as being choked, and he was like, well, maybe not, and kind of just as being pinned down more than anything else. But he sat on me and said, I could have broke your leg, Randy. I didn't. He didn't have a mic. He was just yelling this at Orton. Could have broke your leg, but I didn't because that's not my agenda. He pointed the championship belt and said, that's my purpose. So that's why I didn't break it. And that's how we closed the show. Mark Henry bookending the show, both opening and closing it. And both times, again, being very effective. Looked very good here. Came out, did what he had to do, hit his moves, put the chair down, just sat there talking junk to Orton to close the show. I think it's the best feud WWE has going right now. I think it's more interesting to watch, quite frankly, than, you know, I would have given that to Punk's and Kevin Nash and Triple H, but they came up with a stupid, most ridiculous way to pay off that storyline. And so I think the most compelling thing on TV right now is Mark Henry and Randy Orton. I really loved what Henry did to close the show. What did you think?
Yeah, I don't know what more you could want out of a heel right now on SmackDown. I mean, the one thing that, you know, I've been pretty consistent about in talking about Randy Orton is that I really wish that he would go out there and sell for people a little bit more. He definitely has been encroaching upon you know, the Super Cena in a way. You know, he doesn't go out there and put people over in a big way. And I think one thing that all the great heels that we could talk about throughout, you know, wrestling history is that they've been able to get everybody out there over. You know, even mediocre baby faces, you know, Ric Flair could go out there and you know, get over a broom, right? I mean, that's kind of the stereotype we hear. And those heels, or, you know, those baby faces don't seem to exist in WWE. We had, you know, we saw it tonight twice. You had, you know, Orton kind of no-sold both Rhodes and Henry in his promo, and then, you know, Sheamus went out there and, you know, basically took out Christian and Barrett, two heels that actually needed, you know, a little bit of a positive rub, and he just went out there and squashed them both. So, you know, those types of heels need to exist in WWE or babyface need to exist for the heels to get over. And I'm happy that at least so far in this feud, Orton has went out there and sold big time for Mark Henry, and I hope we see more of it because I think Henry is deserving of at least a short run with the title at some point here in the near future.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, the problem is I don't want to see him move the title, and yet I cannot think of another person who deserves that strap more right now than Mark Henry. He has been the most entertaining thing all summer on SmackDown. It's been unbelievable how good he's been. And I think he was just more of the good stuff here, and he closed us out and left us with a very good ending. It doesn't really hype much for next week, but I am interested to tune in to see what's going to happen because, you know, if anybody's going to get over on Henry, it's going to be Orton. Because he's gone over everybody at this point. I mean, even the loss he took to Sheamus was a count-out loss. They ended up leaving Sheamus destroyed at the end of that on top of the stairs. So, I mean, they've booked him very, very, very strong, and I'm praying to God they don't screw it up here. He is the best heel right now in WWE. At least it's a certain heel. We don't know exactly what's going on Raw with some of those guys. But certainly the person you can point to and say, he's a heel, he's the best guy right now. And the best hope for a good match from SmackDown. Do you think we're going to get Ted DiBiase for the Intercontinental Championship next week? I mean, that's the only match with the two mid-card matches, the U.S. title and Intercontinental title, have yet to be booked. The tag titles are booked. It's going to be Miz and R-Truth versus Air Boom. And then both the world titles are booked. And then, of course, we have the Divas title and the CM Punk versus Triple H match with the COO ship on the line. So we've got to book the two mid-card matches. I'm not really asking you to fantasy book here as far as what would you want to do. But what do you think we're going to get? They've got one show left to book. I mean, I guess they could do it on Raw. But even then, you've only got two shows, let's say, at most left to build a story around the Intercontinental Championship. And the only thing I can think of that's sitting out there that you could turn into a story that fast would be Ted DiBiase. Do you think that's where they go? And if not, where do you think they'll go?
It has to be DiBiase at this point, and I think they should do it on Monday, if at all possible. And I think they have to book a U.S. title match as well, and I'm assuming we're going to get, Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger for that. But, this is the Night of Champions pay-per-view. I was assuming that basically every belt was going to be on the show, so they got to book something.
They said that.
Yeah. They got to book something. I mean, and that seems to be the ready-made match. So why not go out there and do it? I mean, it's those two can be entertaining out there. We've seen it before. So, let's give them all, 10, 15 minutes and have them go out there and put on a show. And I think those two are capable of it. Whether or not you can book it that quickly and have it feel important, I guess, is the real question. But I don't think they have a choice at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you got enough time to make anything seem important, but at least I think Swagger and Ziggler has more potential on the Raw side to have a greater storyline impact. But I think, you're right. The only thing you can do right now on SmackDown that makes any sense is Ted. Is there enough time to put it together and make it feel important? I don't think so. In fact, it might even open the show for all we know at this point. But so I think those two could go out and have a good match and set a good standard, but nobody's really going to care that much about the match. Anything else you want to add about this week's SmackDown before we get out of here? I mean, I think we agree that it was a good SmackDown. It didn't do a whole lot, but as far as just 2 hours of entertainment, it was a good couple hours of wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't leave a bad taste in your mouth or anything. It's just, I kind of feel like an overall malaise when I'm watching WWE products lately just because of how, short-sighted a lot of the booking seems at times. But, I mean, as far as entertainment value is concerned, I can't really say that the show failed to, meet expectations. It was definitely a fast 2 hours of television.
It was, and that is all we have today. We will stop talking about the fast 2 hours of television. One more week left until Night of Champions. They've got to book a U.S. title match, got to book an Intercontinental title match. Everything else pretty much so set at this point. So next week we will be back to talk about this. Remember's only next week, though, so remember, if you'd like to hear this, more of Jake and I on this conversation or Jason on Raw, Will Pruitt on Impact, Jason and I on .NET Weekly, Will and Jake on .NET Countdown. Any of those audio shows, access to the member site, the ad-free version of the site, .NET Members Forum, .NET Members Blog. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side. Click on the .NET Members Sign-Up page, all the information you need to sign up to have access to all those things, plus all the old audio, interviews with Shane Helms, with Chris Jericho, Christopher Diaz, the playwright of the Labyrinth of Chad Deity, Michelle Dayton, whatever her name was, on former wife of Johnny Fairplay, who was on WWE Tough Enough. Along with Jeremiah Riggs, who was on there. Tons of audio for you guys, all the other things. $7.50 gets you 1 month $5.50 gets you a month if you sign up for the full year. And after you do all that, head on over to thefollowingcontest.com. Check out my new work of fiction, just 99 cents, available for any type of e-reader, any type of computerized device. You can get it on there in some format, some way or form. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support and for coming to ProWrestling.net. If you're listening on iTunes, thank you for checking that out there. And if you're not listening on iTunes, just look within the storyline where you got this audio and you can get all the information about signing up for the iTunes podcast as it becomes available there. Thank you, everyone, so much. Enjoy your weekend, the first weekend of football. Go Panthers on Sunday. We'll see you back next time. Take care.